Wednesdays start with Luke Hodge and the place of mental intimidation on the modern footy field. Luke Parker's gesture, taunting. Do you have an issue with that?
No, I don't, because I think it's part of the game. It's part of gamesmanship. It's edgy, and I'm pretty sure that a lot of people would watch that and feel that's disrespectful. But I think we got to remember that when you do cross that white line, you're playing a game, and it's a physical game, but it's not just a physical challenge. It's a psychological challenge, and it's an emotional challenge. I don't mind it. I don't mind the attitude, because it still is a combative sport. You still need to understand that it's me v you, and it's us v you.
The physical contact sport that we play is a contest, a physical, mental, emotional one. Bullying's a dirty word in the world now, but on a footy field, you are trying to bully the opposition. And as Sheed says, you can never be intimidated. And if you allow yourself to be intimidated or dominated, even verbally or emotionally, you are going backwards big time. If a player did that to any player that I coached, including myself if I was playing, you'd at least go and grab him and wrestle him and, like, just kind of fight back. Not like you've been embarrassed by the words and by the action, so you've got to fight back straight away. Not go and punch him. Just create the altercation so that, hey, I'm not going to take this. Do not ever allow yourself to be bullied or intimidated or dominated. And Kevin Sheedy said it so well a decade ago, and that holds just as equally today.
Lee Matthews on Sports Day last night. Nathan Buckley in the studio yesterday. He would be our Minister for Mental Intimidation, I think. Luke Hodge, welcome.
Morning, Jared. I guess whenever
this
Lee
is
Matthews,
your sweet spot,
whenever
isn't it?
Lee Matthews says something, you never argue with Lee Matthews, I believe. I guess that's a part of the intimidation that he sends out to the rest of us. But, you sort of sit back, and I sat back and was just thinking, when do you hear most sledges on a football field? And there's certain times, say in the forward 50, if someone's on the boundary line, selfishly has a shot when there's teammates in better positions, or someone doesn't give a handball and they have it, try and have a shot over, snap over their shoulder, opposition players will verbally get stuck into them, telling them how selfish they are, letting them and their teammates know that they're not as good of teammates as what they should be. They're people in a better position, and you solely do that to make them second guess. And some people, it's water off a duck's back. Some people, they don't care, and next time they'll either make the right decision and handball or kick it. But some people, it gets stuck into, and then when they're in that situation the next time, they'll be hesitant. Do I have a shot? Do I not have a shot? Do I pass it? Do I handball it? What am I doing? Am I really a selfish teammate? So there is so many areas in our game is when you say stuff to really put doubt in people's mind. And the other one is what Parker did to Dylan Scheel was the question is next time he goes, and it's the same thing. You say it to people if you think you can get under their skin or they're going to hesitate. There's certain blokes you don't. If I was playing against Jonathan Brown and he ducked his head, because to be honest, Jared, everyone's ducked their head at some stage. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go and say to Jonathan Brown, you're soft, you're weak, you took short steps, because I know next time he goes near that ball, what will happen. But the people who you do it to is you do it to people who you think are going to hesitate next time, second guess himself, and then when they're over the ball the next time, they'll fumble because they're second guessing himself. They'll look up to sort of see what's going to happen. This is where it is a part of those mind games.
So did you spend your time probing for mental weakness?
I think in today's game, you've got so much going on, and especially when I was in the back half, you had the whole play in front of you. So you're trying to make sure your teammates are in certain positions and looking for, is this a fifth going up? And there's so many different things to look for when you're playing in defence. But if someone shirked at issue, or if someone was selfish in front of goal, of course you'd go and speak to them, especially if you knew that they would be affected next time they go near the football. And if you do that and then they don't respond, as it happened on the weekend, the next time, what do you reckon is going to happen the next time you play? You're going to be mentioning it to him. When the ball goes up in the air, you'll be yelling, letting him know. I went back and tried to find where Dylan either ducked or, and there was nothing that really stood out. So whether it was just he fumbled the ball and Luke Powell ended up kicking that goal, it's... It's it's just the mind games. That's the one that sort of sticks out.
So did did the mind games appeal to you, or did you find that the longer you went, you were so busy looking after your own patch that there was sort of less expression for it?
I always enjoyed a chat every now and then.
Yes.
it wasn't the first priority when you went out there. What you do, and there's certain people in opposition teams where you thought if I got my opportunity, I'd mention it. Just the same as there were certain blokes that I played against who love, especially when I was younger, having a go because they know I'd react. And there's certain people that you say things to where you can get under their skin. And as I said, if you look at someone and they, Chris Judd, if I sat back out there on the ground, I wouldn't bother wasting my time talking to him because I know that it's water off a duck's back. If he missed a shot at goal, he's not going to care. He'll do the same thing next time. There's certain people out there where you know you can either physically intimidate them, verbally intimidate them, or just make them second guess that next play, and they're the ones you go after. And it's not in a bad way. It's more the fact that just to let them know that if that means if they second guess themselves, it might put doubt amongst their teammates. And I remember as a young kid, we played against Port Adelaide the first couple of years when Clarko had sort of taken over the reins. And Port used to flog us physically, verbally, and that had an impact against a young Hawthorn side for 4, 5, 6 years. Even to the stage when it was in the 2010, 11, 12, we had a couple of good times against them, but they were always thereabouts and they upset us a number of times when they shouldn't have beaten us. And I think a lot of it's got to do is because they used to torment us and it would be in the back of their mind if we couldn't get away from them when we should. It just sort of creeps there and you have doubt.
How did you break that?
Oh, it's more as you get older, you have confidence in what you do, you put time and effort in and you realise, pardon me, you realise that external stuff that gets said to you is irrelevant unless you really believe it. So by the end of the career, people can say stuff to you as you're older and you walk away, you don't care, you've got enough going on and you've got faith because you've done it time and time again and you've put that much work into your game that you know it's not a flaw. It's the ones where there is doubt in your mind. There is doubt in your mind. That's the ones that's the effective one. That's the one people continue to target. So I'd be looking for Essendon this week. There's no doubt after seeing Hep go on I think it was on the couch on Monday night and sort of say this is going to change. He's got belief in the group. He's got belief in where they're going. I think next time that someone's going to come out there, there's going to be a stand up. Whether someone will look after him, Shield's going to go and back himself and protect himself, but then his teammates will be around. For no one to do anything, I can't say yes, especially the backlash that they've got this week.
The NFL has a no taunting rule, so we have the ruffling of hair and whatever else this is. What do you think of their approach to rule out the taunting from player to player?
Oh, I think that would... Our game's a lot different to theirs. Theirs is a very stop-start. Everyone's in the view of the umpire. We've got that much stuff going on in front of the ball, behind the ball, in and around the contest. I just think that would just be another area for the umpires that you'll see one happen, then the next one won't, and then we'll be comparing to which umpire does it, which one doesn't do it. The inconsistency is sort of like what we're doing with the dissent rule.
Yep.
I think it just brings in another question where we're going to be hard critics on the umpires for picking up ones and missing the neck. So, as I said, as long as it doesn't get too bad or something said where it crosses the line or something physical where you're going to get reported, anything in between, pardon me, mate, losing my voice,
right.
Anything in between, I think it's game on. And it sort of does, it does build for resolve. And it also shows for support. If you've got... I go back to Collingwood round one, Dacos making his debut. St Kilda got stuck into Dacos when he made that mistake right at the start of the game and his teammates came and looked after him and protecting him. That also builds a lot with a group. And that's what I think. That's where you can intimidate people and you can't intimidate other teams. And I think Essendon were intimidated on the weekend, but I reckon we'll see a different side next time someone tries to intimidate one of their players.
So we ask you to run the rule over leaders in the competition as one of the, well, the great leader of the era. So how did you think Dyson Heppel handled his lot as Essendon captain?
Do you mean straight away
after the game? Yeah, really on the couch and what comes next?
Yeah, it's sort of hard. You know what he's going to say. It's almost the same as Jack Zeeble coming out pretending he knows. Like, your role out there is to support your club, let everyone know out there that you have faith in the process and you have faith in the direction that your club's going. How he was on, you could tell he was upset, he was disappointed, he was very defensive on Monday night. But when you got everyone coming at you, former greats of your club coming at you, I'd probably be the same. But I guess it's all about, as Jack Zeeble said, you can talk as much as you want, but the actions are going to tell the story of what's going to happen. And I guess that's what everyone's going to be looking at. What team are they this weekend? And if anyone's going to taunt any one of them, whether it's the youngest person on the field, whether it's the captain, whether it's Shear, whether it's anyone on that field, what does your teammates, what's their response to it? Personally, what's the person who's getting taunted to start with? But then everyone else, are they in it as a team? And what Hep said on Monday night is, are you going to see a supportive, tight team, or are you going to see some individuals who won't look after one another? That's the big question.
Sam Edmund is here with the latest in footy news for Coach Nick. Contact Coach Nick and you may just change your business forever. Hello to you, Sam.
Good morning to you, Jerry. Good to be here.
It feels to me like in many an office around many a cafe this morning, there's a little game being played. And it does, it's the sort of game that requires this.
Well, we had to break the glass to get that out.
The trade bell.
Had to dust off the trade bell, Jerry.
So the totally hypothetical and rampant speculation topic of the morning is if it came to pass that Dusty wanted to go and live in Sydney, how would he get there? And our most fertile minds, our trade bell minds, you would have recognised these. Just a quick flurry. Guess which name? A player in New South Wales, either Swans or Giants. Guess which name came up?
Well, that's funny.
15 or 20 times.
Right.
Name that defines our trade bell period. Yes. Everyone's convinced. Young player with old connections.
You're right on the water cooler debate. We're having it literally at the back 10 minutes ago, but we're dealing in picks and how many picks Dusty's worth and what sort of pick. But now that you've piqued my interest with a name, it's come back to me. It's him, isn't it? It's Tom Green.
It is Tom Green.
The grandson of.
I would have had a flurry of 20 messages going, this is the way. This is the way Tom Green gets to Richmond and Dusty goes to the Giants.
He is GWS's answer to Angus Brayshaw. Every year he comes up, he's going to be traded home. Home, quote unquote, of course, the grandfather, Michael. Four-time premiership player, a member of Richmond's team of the 20th century as well, Michael Green. And funnily enough, you mentioned Tom Green. It was a couple of months ago this made headlines Brendan Gale was seen having lunch with Michael Green in a Melbourne cafe, which caught the eye of a few. Heaven forbid two Richmond people could just be having lunch. No, this is a way to get Tom Green to Richmond.
I love it. So for all of you who text that through, a salute. A salute to you because you are dogged. You are dogged. But it is. So I know you've been having the conversation out the back with a Richmond supporter is how could you ever get it done?
Well, the hands out. The Richmond supporters have got, not one hand out, two hands out. They want two first round picks, Jerry, and they want something else as well. So it was a good debate. You know, Dustin Martin in his 13th season, 31 next month, 31 at the end of June. What would, this is just great fun, isn't it? What would GWS give up? What would Richmond accept? He's got 2 years to run on a contract. So we went right into it, Jared. Yep. Well, they could smooth it out, GWS. It's big money now, but you give him 4 years. He could play until he's 35. Dusty is a deep forward. So it's great fun. Great fun to play out. And who knows, come the end of the year, maybe we'll have something a bit more materialistic.
I'm a Richmond fan. If Dustin wants to go, we could get Taranto and Tom Green. It's a win. I love your trade bell spirit. I love it. It's
good. It is good fun. And who knows where it goes? I mean, it will be interesting to see. And those comments from Damien Hardwick, just so surprising yesterday. And
I still think...
What leverage would they have, though?
I still think in context, crikey, that's a big one. Yeah, I hope not. And then still, he defaults to empathetic leadership.
Still, though, most would stop at crikey, that's a big one. We're not considering that at all at this stage, wouldn't you?
I love Damien Hardwick in these
He's
moments.
Come out of his, wouldn't say shell, but he's...
So this is a whole series of events being rolled in so that 2 + 2 = 476. So Phil Rothfield's pieces about Dusty loving Sydney and wanting to spend the last years of
Gallen.
His career training with Paul Gallen, comes back, he's served his, well, he's given Richmond so much, would they really stand in his way? But there's, as Hodgie said this morning, there's a huge difference between, yep, you go with our blessing and, oh, by the way, we're going to do a proper deal here to make it worthwhile.
Would they make it hard for him, really hard for him? And,
no,
and
they wouldn't
what
make
that
it
would
hard
look
for
like,
him.
They wouldn't
they would
hold
make
him
it again. Really hard for either the Giants or the Swans.
Well, that's making it hard for him if he wants to leave.
No, I think you can.
It's a slippery publicity slope, isn't
it? I think
not?
You can do both. You can say, of course, we'll help you get to New South Wales. But
should we find
one
a
of these
deal?
Two clubs has to fulfill their end of the bargain. He's not a... He's not a washed-up commodity just yet.
No.
So if you ran it in 2 years' time when his contract finishes, that's a totally different scenario. But if we are talking 2023, this is just the highly speculative pub talk this morning.
So do you go back after 13 seasons, what would Lance Franklin have gotten a trade? What would Gary Ablett Jr. have got with a trade? That's where we were going out the back there moments
ago. So they're a bit further on. Martin is further on his career than that. So they're not quite like-for-like.
But run the maths to make them like-for-like. Yeah. So if Lance Franklin's still at Hawthorn at the age of 30, turning 31, what would he command?
And then would you do it? If you're the Giants or the Swans, would you do it?
Well, that's a whole other question. And you wouldn't give up Tom Green. You are hanging on to Tom Green as if life depends on it. Contracted for one more year. I tell you are not giving him up, Jared. You are not.
It's great pub talk.
You go with the picks, I reckon. Hey, speaking of talk, the AFL did plenty of that on the eve of the season, didn't they? They went on a publicity spree, Jared, and Gil McLaughlin, a campaign trail, if you like, to spruik life being back to normal and getting fans back to games. They were concerned, and it would appear, for a pretty good reason, if the raw numbers for the first 9 rounds are anything to go by, rightfully concerned, because life has just changed, hasn't it? Everyone will have a different reason for not going to the footy, not going to the theatre, not going to the movies, not even going into the city, the lot. So the average attendance per game this year is 31, just a tick over 31,000, down from just a tick over 37,000 in the last non-COVID year, which was 2019. So it's a decent drop. It's a 16% drop. It is the lowest figure since the mid-1990s, apart from those two COVID-affected years. So as a result of that, you would have read it in the Herald Sun today, the AFL are allowing kids up to 14 to enter all AFL grounds completely and utterly for free between rounds 14 and 17. So that school holiday period, continuing to reward fans, trying to coax people back to the game, encouraging people back to the stand. So I think kids up to 14 were only 6 to 14 were $5 anyway, but this is just all about encouraging families to get back.
So have you crunched a few numbers on where the drop-offs are?
If you go through the clubs and the biggest drops from 2019, you're looking at some of the biggest clubs in the game. You're looking at West Coast down 37%. Now, they did have a 50% reduction in capacity at Optus Stadium, which does affect that figure a little bit. But then Collingwood down 36% as a big club in the game. Adelaide, the two Adelaide clubs, Adelaide, the Crows down 25%. The Power down 18%. We know Essendon have had their troubles. They're down 17%. Richmond's down 13.5%. So these are big drawing clubs, and we've had great results. I mean, we've had Anzac Day, we've had Anzac Eve, we've had Carlton and Richmond that have drawn 70, 80, 85,000. But by and large, the crowd numbers are down and the AFL's trying to do something about it.
Yeah, so is it COVID reticence or is it something more? That's if I was in at the league, I'd pose this question before the season started. Is there an unknowable aspect to this that you would be desperately trying to learn? They need to be so connected to their fan base right now to fully understand what the obstacles are. And we hear regularly what
cost of living is another one.
Smooth the obstacles as best as possible in the changed circumstances of the world.
So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out for the rest of the year. Jared, training at the moment, Collingwood, they're running around. No Jack Crisp, no Steel Sidebottom.
Hey, Jack Crisp.
Exactly. Now, Steel Sidebottom, just quickly, he's sick. Now, he hasn't been at the club all week. You'd think with the same bug. Well, it's not COVID, I'm told. It's a bug, and you'd assume the same one that's been floating around that club for weeks. Now, Jack Crisp not training there, we're told, as well. So,
how many games in a row is he up to?
172, comfortably at the moment, the longest active streak in the game. Jim Steins is still the length of the Nullarbor off in the distance at 244, the late and great Jim Steins. But 172 he's on at the moment, Jack Crisp. That is an unbelievably long streak, and I think 50 more than the next best. So if he misses, this is seismic.
Yes.
But it's only Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah. So time is with him at the
moment. Fingers crossed. They've had a big injury toll as well down there. So confirmation yesterday that defender Jack Madgen will miss around 6 weeks with a dislocated shoulder.
Can you stay with me?
Yep.
I want to just run the commission aspect to today. So yesterday we had the treasurer of the AFL Fan Association ring up, and he made a powerful case on behalf of those who believe the grand final should be retained in the afternoon. That group doesn't speak for all fans. That was really clear in what came through. So there were a heap of messages. We were just tied up in other things at the time. So I'm happy to take those messages and take your calls. 1-300-736-736, the big decision that sits before the commission today. This is Waitley for Red Energy Moving House. Call local energy retailer Red Energy and introducing Starryload, the van. That's huge on safety.
Polls and surveys have consistently shown that 75 to 80% of fans want a day grand final. So if you're going to change that, you need a really strong, compelling reason to go against what 80% of people want. Now, in making the decision, the question becomes, who is more important, the fans, the players, or the broadcasters? And I can tell you, fans feel that they're not as important as players and broadcasters. But when you think about it logically, fans should be the most important, because during the pandemic, when there were no fans at the games, the game was really not the same, was it? And players felt it. You yourself as a commentator said it. And fans watching on TV felt the game wasn't the same. So who represents the fans when the AFL Commission make a decision about a day grand final versus a twilight grand final? And I think it's about time we have a fan representative when the AFL Commission or the AFL make decisions that impact fans.
So that was Ron Isco yesterday, who's the treasurer of the Fan Association. I feel like we prove daily there is no single fan voice, we could open the lines for 3 hours and you could get the disparity of view. So Ron cites a majority, which I think he's right to do. I'm in the minority. The AFL Commission has this decision to make, Sam.
I think this is one issue where you can safely assume that the majority of the fan base want the grand final start time to be in its traditional slot, that being 2 something in the afternoon on a Saturday during the day. That's what they tell us. That's what we hear loud and clear. So the AFL Commission meet today, where this very topic is right at the top of the areas that they need to discuss. Gillon McLachlan has told us you can forget a night grand final. It's a choice to be made between that traditional start time and a twilight commencement, which we've seen over the last 2 years in Perth and in Brisbane, obviously being a night game as well. So that conversation happens today. I'm not sure if we're going to get the answer today from the commission. It's funny, isn't it? Because everyone you speak to around this topic, be it pundits or other people, say it's a fait accompli. It's going to be a twilight grand final. But then you make some calls close to AFL HQ and it's like, well, I'm not so sure about that. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't go that far. And do they really want to poke the bear, as you touched on there, Jared? With all the fan discontent at the moment for a variety of reasons, do they go another step down that path, go against the wishes of the majority of fans, I think it's safe to say, and they have a twilight grand final? Would that be salting the wound at the end of a 2022 season?
Yeah, so I think this is a cultural decision. I think the presentation of the match at 4 o'clock is transfixing, the preliminary finals we've had there, but the 2:30 has such a stronghold over people. So if you are asking me to guess, I think the AFL will keep the afternoon slot for the time being.
Because?
For the very reason of not upsetting a significant portion of its football public.
With an eye to?
I think the next TV rights will clearly move the time slot of the grand final back, because empirically, more people watch. And this is where I think there's a fault in it. There's a core fan group who believe they own the game. And I don't know whether they're people who still think the pub should shut at 6 and there should be no Sunday trading and 6 games on a Saturday afternoon was a great idea or not. But that is a group that doesn't want progress intruding into their grand final. But more people watch if you push it back towards prime time. And ultimately, you have to get the maximum audience for your biggest event.
And for your biggest deal, which is a TV rights deal. At the end of the day, everyone's got their hand out for money. Tasmania, AFLW, the men's competition as well, the soft cap, all the clubs are railing against that. They want that to go up. So there's so many hands out at the moment, Jared. How do they feed all those mouths?
Yeah, and So I think they will keep it for a moment down the track.
It's going to be huge, isn't it, yeah, either way?
Because it's a cultural decision, it's not a pen stroke. So I'm going to take a few calls around this in a moment. Just the Jack Crisp scenario is he's crook.
He is crook. He is sick, so the streak is in jeopardy. Fingers crossed for him at 172 games. You'd hate to miss because you've got a bug or a virus. I mean, a serious injury is horrific, but at least you can't do anything about that. So it's only Wednesday. Fingers crossed for him because I love a good streak, Jared.
Streaks are great.
And he's in darn good form as well. He's a bloody good player for them. So the commission meeting, as you mentioned, today, right now, in person, around the mahogany table, with a number of topics to get through. The most pertinent is the AFLW CBA that's caused so much angst. So we're expecting an answer on that this week. At least that's what the key stakeholders are saying.
All right. Excellent, Sam. Thank you.
Thanks, Jared.
Matthew Mott has been such a driving force behind Australia's women's success in cricket. They've been heralded across all forms. His reward is now to be picked up as coach in England of the white ball setup. So he's lost to the Australian program. Ben Horne's the chief cricket writer at News Corp. Ben, great to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me, Jared.
So it's Australia's loss for sure. England's gain. What an interesting set of circumstances in England. Baz McCullum for the test team, and now Matthew Mott for their white ball setup.
It is, Jared. And look, I think the relationship between the two is obviously a key aspect of it. Apparently, Brendan McCullum recommended Matthew for a job as New Zealand coach a few years ago and started, but they do have a good, a close bond. As Andrew McDonald discussed when he took over the Australian role and taking on all three formats, there was concerns in Australian cricket about the dynamic between a white ball and red ball coach and what happens when you have to choose which players represent in each format. There's a bit of friction there. So the strong relationship between McCullum and Mott will help. But it's an excellent appointment and it's a great reward for, someone who has an outstanding record as a coach.
It has been outstanding, hasn't it? His time with the women's team, I mean, they have been all conquering, and there'd be a great measure of his worth in those results.
Absolutely. And, I think it's great recognition of the Australian women's team and women's cricket in general that, an outfit like England would treat those results with the respect that they deserve and the admiration they deserve. And, Australia's been time. Yes, they have some great players in that team, but, I think the way that Tim Mott has guided that team, he's got great communication skills. He's got a great manner and presence as coach. And, he's done exactly what was needed to get the best out of that team.
It's quite a role to fill within Australian cricket, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I mean, I guess the attention turns to that. Who do you play? What the arrangements are, when this role is announced and that kind of thing. But there is a Commonwealth Games coming up quite soon, so it's something that Australia will have to address quickly, I imagine. And, I imagine there'll be a lot of coaches queuing up for it because, you look at the calibre of player in that team, they're only getting better, even though their career, you'd have to say they're probably in their greatest run of form at the moment.
Behind the scenes at the moment, Ben, and you've been writing about this each week and multiple stories, is what to do with the BBL and its placement and who might be there and how the international fixture that was released last week impacts on that. What's your read at the moment as to how delicate this is, what sort of tension point it is?
Yeah, look, I think it's a make or break year for the Big Bash, and that's hard because some of the results that Cricket Australia are looking to get long term can't be achieved this summer. There's three white ball games against South Africa in January, and no matter what time you play those games, you're going to be missing those international players, obviously, for that period. The grand plan for Cricket Australia is from 2024 and beyond is to blank out January in the international schedule so that after the Sydney Test finishes in early January, perhaps they could get the rest of January for the BBL, which would be a huge quick fix. I mean, it doesn't obviously solve every problem, and there'd still be things around that need to be navigated. But that would be an enormous breakthrough for the competition, because instantly you would have access to the Australian Test team and those players like Glenn Maxwell, Aaron Finch, for the entire tournament without white ball cricket in that period. But the problem is that can't happen straight away. This cycle of the international schedule has to finish first. Time is when the negotiations for the new TV deal will have to begin. So that's the tricky thing. Cricket Australia has to somehow keep the faith with broadcasters and prospective broadcasters and make them believe that there is going to be a turning point for all this.
And in that conversation, you must have been writing about it for sort of 6 or 8 months now, that the potential for a return of Dave Warner to the BBL and into a leadership role, which would require a revisiting of the punishment that was handed down, which banned him from any leadership role within Australian cricket for eternity. Do you think there's progress being made on that front?
I think some progress, but I think there is a feeling at Cricket Australia that the conversation needs to be listened to. So I think there has been a change. And look, personally, I think it's a deceptively key part of Cricket Australia's plan here to get playing, because you have a player like that who, aside from being one of the best T20 players in the world, you only have to look at his performances in the IPL. But he's a batsman who wouldn't have to rest January, as players like Pat Cummins and Mitchell Starc will still have to do, regardless of the international window that's created. And secondly, he's not far away from retirement. You know, he may only have one or two summers left in him, which means the opportunity to secure him for, you know, the next few years in the BBL is, you know, I think 5 years since Sandpaper Gate. And I think when you look at how the penalties were handed out and how where we are now, I think it would be very wise for Cricket Australia to revisit that.
Ben, always good to tap your thoughts. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us, Jared. Cheers.
Good on you. Ben Horne, the Chief Cricket Writer at News Corp.